This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I assume that we are live. Before we get into this one, as always, please get involved by liking, sharing, subscribing and commenting. 7,000 listeners joined our fans phone in Twitter space yesterday. And that feels like a lifetime ago, doesn't it? And although I'm not expecting anywhere near that figure tonight, I still find it absolutely mad that people enjoy our live content this much. So as I say, share away, give it a like, comment, subscriptions are always appreciated. Jump in whilst you can, James. Go on. Give us your thoughts, your initial thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, there's so, like Joe said, there's so many disparate thoughts about Foster, about the last hours of his reign. But I think whatever happens, there will have to be some kind of inquest, whatever happens at the end of the season, whether it's whether we go down or stay up, that what has led us to these decisions that's been taken this season, and is the governance of the club, which has been such a big part of success, how has that functioned through the last 6 months? Because we've got Stu stepping into this role. He's Foster's boss. The line of command is Foster, Dewsnip. He's, you know, his line manager who reports to the board. So any decision Foster makes that beyond kind of day-to-day running should be sort of okayed by Dewsnip. So when Foster came in and was, as a rookie manager at this level, allowed to change the system to how he wanted it, allowed to change the approach to how he wanted it, we had these comments about how much information the players were taking on board, and then very quickly into like a serious run of games, that should have obviously be okayed by Dewsnip. So you've got him stepping into the role, and you do wonder what he's been doing over the last couple of months, because he's supposed to be the conduit between the board and Foster and the team. So big question for me, it's just big question marks there about what he's going to bring to the table now as caretaker manager. Well, what wasn't he bringing to the table as effectively Foster's manager, line manager in the over the last 2 months? And you know, anyone who works in any sort of structure, if your employees or the people you manage aren't performing, that's pretty much on you, and to a certain extent. And we've seen Foster cut a lonely, forlorn figure with no support, with no one coming in to sort of back him. So yeah, it kind of leaves me scratching my head what Dewsnip's been doing, and then feeding into that why we're not looking at someone with the experience too in the league. So yeah, tons of questions there. Again, sorry to go on, but that governance also goes down to, as we said, the support staff. We won't go there. Even the recruitment in January, if we knew that it was likely that a high risk of Azaz leaving, then where was the like for like replacement there? Where we don't seem to have of sign players that fit. We don't even seem to assign players that follow the data mantra of the club. They seem to be either people Foster had a relationship with or had a knowledge of. They were such young players, they didn't even have data to go with them, some of them. So Souza and JB, there's no data there. So it feels like we've thrown away a lot of the governance and processes that have led us to make good decisions. And I think when the season finishes, we need to work out how that happened and how that doesn't happen again.
Yeah, on exactly that, Nick. Richard Sloman asks, do we need to talk more about the recruitment? Whilst it is 100% the right call on Foster, signing half-fit players, recall clauses on our best players, no new striker in January. Is there an argument to say whoever's in charge would face a very tough task keeping us up in the league with our budget and that recruitment?
It's a loaded question because it's assuming that the recruitment is poor, which I think we generally all agree with, but you know, it might be that players haven't performed, but the recruitment itself wasn't necessarily poor. But it's assumed that it's both poor and that that's connected to not having enough money. Sam and I were discussing way back in early February that we thought it was it could have been linked to what seemed to be the strategy when we first got promoted back to League One, which was we sold Niall Canavan, we brought in a bunch of extra loanies, having already had a very young defence, and we wondered if it was a case of stockpiling money for the summer, knowing that players are more expensive in January, knowing that we were in a decent position to survive. We didn't necessarily need to throw money at it. And by stockpiling it for the summer, we'd get better value for money. We've got absolutely nothing to back that up. But that was a thought that we had, because, I mean, I don't see where the Schumacher and backroom staff alleged million pounds went. I don't see where the Gillespie money went. We basically brought a player in for every player that we let out. They didn't seem... are we paying that much more for Devine and JB and so forth? But I don't know if it's budget related, but for me Foster had to go for all the reasons we've all gone on about, but Doosnip seems to me to be the person most at fault for the post January collapse. He's the person who set the strategy that took us back to 3-4-3. I personally think that's heavily influenced this. I know people disagree with me, but that's my perspective on that. He obviously brought Foster in. He's the person who oversees ultimately all the signings that we make. I see comments there about Devine replacing Azaz, but what about Kundal? I mean, we lost Azaz and Kundal. They're 22 of, as you can tell, there's an article coming out tomorrow, but 22 of 50 goals up until that point were directly influenced, scored or assisted by Azaz or Kundal. And we've lost both of them and brought in one player, Alfie Devine, with no minutes at championship level to replace him. Sorry, I'm trying not to grin at the comments.
It's harder than it looks, especially when they're aimed at you.
I believe you. And then you can take another level too. Allegedly had a falling out with Shuey, given the comments in the press. You can see that there might be something in that. He ultimately hired Foster, fired him too late in my eyes, might have been involved in Shuey staying. I don't know. For me, I look at this and think that most of the questions need to be answered by... This is obviously tangential to the original question that was asked, but I look at this and see Doosnip more involved than Foster. Doosnip's got... I don't think he necessarily needs to go, though. I mean, if he goes down as the figurehead manager, then he probably is surely going to go. But he's definitely got questions to answer. And I imagine to Hallett, not to us, maybe at a fans forum, but he's definitely got questions to answer to Hallett in terms of what's gone wrong here. Why would you make such a significant change when you didn't necessarily need to midway through a season that's ultimately taken us from looking quite comfortable to, well, yeah, it's probably going to the final day, whether we like it or not. If you assume that it's going to be about 47 points is the number of points that goes down and 48 keeps you up, then one win leaves us 3 points away from that. And so one win and we'll be in touch on the last day. I think it's most likely... whether we stay up or go down, it goes to the final day regardless.
Sorry to go away from the sacking and bring it on to Rotherham, because I don't want to touch on some of Joe's questions. And I sort of want to sneak in a cheeky Alfie Devine ref watch. Really quick one, Joe. But obviously looking ahead to Friday's fixture then, do you see us being able to go up there and get all 3 points, James?
Yeah, I mean, we certainly can. what needs to be addressed is chance creation, and that has dropped off massively under the dying days of Foster. And we have obviously been creating more away from home, but Dewsnip and Nance need to find a system, or revert to a system, or get us firing in some way that they've got to tread the line between solving some of the problems that Foster's created or faced, and also not reverting to the exact same problems that we faced under Schumacher, where we were lucky to come away from the Rotherham game at home with a win. So, as we spoke about earlier, there's no sort of continuity exercise where you just sort of keep going to keep doing what you're doing. There needs to be a change. There needs to be a quite precise change, and they've got less. They've got less talent at their disposal just by through injuries and the players they didn't have before. So yes, of course we can get a result. Rotherham obviously picked up a result last weekend. Of course we can get something. We need a new manager bounce. We need belief. We need bravery. We need an injection of impetus, and just got to hope that the squad were affected by the atmosphere under Foster, and that they're able to produce something the pressure off, the freedom to express themselves and create.
Yeah, obviously, Joe, this is where I'm going to shoehorn it in. I'm sort of flip-flapping all over the place here. Obviously, one player who won't be present on Friday is Alfie Devine. He'll be suspended after his red card on Monday. So do a quick analysis of that.
We've literally got 2,100 people watching. I reckon they're all here for Ref Watch. They're all avid Keith Stroud fans. Look, when you see the name Keith Stroud on the appointment, you know that he's going to be the star of the show, isn't he? It's his performance. He's the circus ringleader, if you like. My thoughts on the Alfie Devine red card. Ian Foster had more of a problem with the first yellow than the second, I believe, having listened back to his post-match press conference. Now, the first yellow is where the player he impedes, if you like, picks the ball up deep in our half, carries it about 30, 40 yards. Devine's having a good pull at his shoulder, his shirt. It's soft. Like, there's no, he's not like yanking his shirt off like that. He's literally just got a little grip of his shoulder. And as the player feeds the ball out to the right, the lad goes to ground. There's no advantage. Keith Stroud tries to play the advantage, brings it back, and books him. Look, do I think it's soft? Yes. Do I think it's a yellow? Probably, because Devine's gone with him for 20, 25 yards. He's trying everything he can to stop the player running. Now, he's doing a pretty bad job of it, let's be honest. The lad's always half a yard in front of him, and Devine doesn't really get a good grip of his shirt. That's the stupid thing. I want to come on to the kit in a minute, Aaron, as well. He shouldn't be wearing two pairs of green shorts. Pathetic. But the Bristol City player then throws
about all the important things.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what the people are here for. He throws himself to the ground. Now, then you get onto the second yellow card. And I do think Ian Foster somewhat threw him under the bus a little bit with his comments in the press. He didn't exactly help Alfie Devine out at all. When he talks about protecting the players in previous press conferences, he well and truly hung him out to dry by saying, I think his words were, when you're on a yellow card, you can make a tackle like that. And does he get the ball? Don't know. Does he get plenty of the player? Yes, probably after getting the ball, or even as he's getting the ball. But the big problem with me, and this is what I say about loads of decisions, is that players always put themselves in a position to make the referee make a decision. And, I know I'm having a little dig at Keith Stroud, but when you're on a yellow card, for Christ's sake, don't let Keith Stroud in front of a full house at any football stadium make a decision, because he's going to send you off. He's just going to do it. It is a red card. It's two very silly fouls. Does it have a great impact on the game? Probably not, if I'm honest. I don't think we were really contributing anything worthwhile to the second half. I struggle to remember too many shots in the second half. I certainly don't remember the keeper making anything that you can class more of a routine than a routine save. So it's a red card. It doesn't help the situation. It only allows Bristol City to make a mockery of how we were try to cope with it. I think we actually ended up going to a 4-2-3 or something ridiculous. Like, we completely sacrificed the midfield. We played Bundu, Whittaker and Hardy up front, and we literally just had a wave of players there and nothing in the middle. And Bristol City just ran through us and could have scored freely. So, look, Alfie Devine will learn from that. That's the important thing. And we said it when these players come in. Ian Foster said it himself, and he is right. Look, we don't want to hear it at the moment because we're in a relegation battle and we need players to do everything they can to help us. But these players are always on a learning journey. Every game for them is one step on their development. And whilst it might not help us at the moment, it's only going to make them, a decent footballer. So we do have to remember that. And
I'm so happy for Spurs.
Well, I'm more happy for Stoke City, who might get him on loan next season, probably. But I do think I am somewhat disappointed by the reaction on social media that went Alfie Devine's way yesterday. We shouldn't be reacting the way we did. Look, we all have opinions on did he try to get sent. You can make your own conclusions and whatever you want, whether you think Alfie Devine's a good player or not, but we don't call players out and throw abuse the way that we did to a young player the way we did yesterday. And that's somewhat disappointing for me. But he'll learn, and I'm sure he'll be back in and around the squad. It's only a one game suspension, isn't it? Because it was two yellow. So he'll be back for the QPR game on Tuesday night. And, we're going to need everybody we have available to us. So, move on, Aaron. It's time for something else. We're bored of ref watch. Keith Stroud's had enough airtime on this podcast tonight.
At least he's back for Tuesday. Yeah, Nick, do you see Friday as a potential banana skin?
I'm actually delighted that they won on Monday, because it's prevented a week of, oh, typical Argyle, we're going to be the first side to lose to Rotherham in 2024. So that's good. And I don't know. So Rotherham need to win. If they don't win, they're officially relegated. I mean, they're as good as down anyway. But that's just another fun little thing to add to it. Do they want to be relegated on TV? Or alternatively, would having been down have released them and they would have played with a level of freedom? I don't know. It's banana skin central, because the pressure is so high on us. We don't know what lineup there's going to be. We don't know what tactics there's going to be. I mean, something's going to have to change given Devine. Presumably, Bundu or Callum Wright's going to come in. I have no idea. It's so much change in the demand for Sam. It's so much change in such a short space of time, and the TV cameras don't help. Oh, that's another fun thing. Have we lost every single televised game this season? Am I right in saying that? Leeds twice.
Not on the red button.
Not on the red button. It was on the red button.
Southampton twice.
Yeah, Southampton twice. I know there's another one in there. Sheffield Wednesday. That was TV, right?
That was TV.
We've lost every... I'm sure we've lost every televised game. So, like, I don't know. It's just... I didn't mind, actually, Foster still being in charge for that one, because his away performance has obviously been better. His away record is decent. And I don't know. I don't like the idea of turning up and trying to be attacking to Rotherham and then doing to us what they did at Home Park, which is playing it long, hitting on the counter and getting a scrappy, annoying win. Obviously, we beat them eventually, but getting a scrappy, annoying win potentially. So I don't know. I think it's going to be a relatively horrible game to watch. I don't think it's going to be very enjoyable, but obviously we've got the quality to win it. So it's just about finding a way to do that.
Nick and James, I know you didn't really hop on to talk about Rotherham. You're going to be swapped out soon. So is there anything you want to mention about the departure of Ian Foster before you depart that you haven't already covered?
Yeah, just an observation might be some people might find it wide of the mark, but I just thought the Bristol City game was the kind of like everything about the Foster era in one game. Like I thought I thought he set up quite well, changed things up. I quite like the way that we approached the game. I thought it was quite a decent piece of sort of coaching where we were Devine or Houghton was dropping back into the defence as a five. You know, we were spreading play. That first 20 minutes was excellent, I thought. And then we didn't create any clear-cut chances. And then when Bristol City changed the game, there's the comments. When Bristol City changed the game, he had no reply and he had no answer to their changes. And that's what ultimately told. So if you want to look at 90 minutes summing up and bookending Foster era, it's kind of all there, good coaching ideas, some excellent play, and there has been some excellent play through his tenure, but inability to change. And the difference between a coach and a manager summed up in one performance, really. So sort of a fitting end, I thought.
We were chatting about the game earlier, me and James.
All right.
Is that allowed?
Yeah, sure.
We have a side chat.
Wasn't there?
We were chatting. Oh, you're allowed to have a little chat with Chris on the side, but no, podcast contributors.
We have a side chat set up from the original Argyle Life.
Oh, yeah. Are they? Oh, right. Carry on.
You want to keep us apart so that the reaction will be genuine the first time we get on for the podcast. we were chatting earlier, and I was disagreeing in a bit with that, which was I didn't like the performance on Monday. I didn't like the tactical shape. I thought it showed to me that Foster had not given up, but like was a bit defeated, that he's gone for this formation for the first time, that I'm sure he obviously knows how to lay down a 4-3-3, but I mean, it felt to me like he was trying to give in to what the fans have been calling for and go back to what had worked for Cherry a bit. But in particular, like you look at the way Cherry's 4-3-3 worked, one of the key bits of the season, inverted fullback coming in, the box midfielder that Pepper made popular last season, and that allowed more attackers to get the ball higher up the pitch. And we've got attacking mids and centre mid, whereas what we had here was a proper flat back four, so the ball's always going wide to fullbacks, and we're trying to go around people by and large. The centre mids, they weren't Azaz or Kundal, they were centre mids. They didn't push on too much, didn't really threaten in the box, didn't really create much. And ultimately that left us with, you know, trying to go around them, ball getting wide to the wingers, but they're all quite isolated, not working together. And ultimately, when Bristol City worked it out after about 25 minutes, we didn't really get forward much aside from the odd counter. So I think the thing that worried me about that is it shows that, you know, you need skill, good coaching, a real refined tactical plan to make a system like Chewy's did work. And it's not just the case of Dusanip comes in, rolls the clock back, 4-3-3, throw the players down in formation, and they're going to start singing in harmony again. That's what kind of concerned me. And so I'm a little bit worried that if that's what we try at Rotherham, they're just going to set up in a compact formation, press a bit, work out how to stop the service, and then it's on Dusanip to work out a way to make it work, if that's how it works. But yeah, that's a bit of a concern for me, that I'm just a bit concerned about whether or not he's got the tactical acumen to make it work, whereas last time he could very much continue what Shuri had been doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely mad that there's nearly 2,500 people watching this right now. Before you go, James, quick one from Toby. Do you guys think the obvious unrest and disconnect among the fan base fast-tracked Foster's sacking, or do you feel it was purely a decision made by the club?
I actually think it didn't fast track the sacking. I think if it had fast-tracked the sacking, we would have seen it an international break. The statistics spoke for themselves in terms of five home games in five home games in a row without scoring, setting a new club record. The Foster's record by the end, anyone would have sacked. We were probably the last team in the EFL that would have sacked him with those numbers. So no, I don't think it did. Did it haste? Did the reaction hasten some of the downfall? But perhaps a closed season debate where I don't know how much. It started to make me wonder. My wife's a Leeds fan. I used to go to Elland Road a lot. And when when the fans, there was a period when they were League One Championship, early Championship, when there's fact that where Elland Road was so toxic and if the result wasn't going their way, the team looked scared to play at home. And I think there's a when the dust settles and calms down. I don't know how much that played into some of our home form by the end, and whether we're in a vicious circle, which was only going to go one way. I would have made the change earlier, and I was quite supportive of Foster. I don't think if fan power would have counted for too much in this, we would have seen him gone at least of the international break or before.
I disagree. Sorry, I'd quickly chime in. I disagree. I think it did influence things. I don't think Hallett would have done it. I mean, Hallett's already said, and I kind of agree, we can afford to be a yo-yo club. I don't want to be, but we can afford to be, and we can afford to go down as long as we go up in the next two seasons and still hit his five-year plan target. I think the fans going was the nail in the coffin that made it inevitable, but I'll speak no longer because we need to give the people what they want.
Yeah, there is an unreal amount of people in the comments wanting Sam down. So I think this is where we bid you farewell, James and Nick, and I'm off in a minute too. How do I? Here we go. I'll swap you out like this, and. First question comes from Sean. Has Sam fixed his MacBook? He's back. Nope, clearly not, because he's on mute.
I have fixed my MacBook, but I forgot to unmute myself. So there's your answer. The MacBook is fixed, but I forgot to unmute myself. Yeah, but at least the camera's working, which is a much better experience than the other day. I think my back's still not quite the same. But yeah, here, quite a eventful 72 hours to say the least, and ready to go.
Jack has said the goat has entered, and that must be you, John. Those things.
Well, goats are like famously grumpy, right? So yeah. No, that's just still Sam.
And you're famously a happy clapper. I'm gonna Apparently, leave yeah. in a minute. I'm gonna leave in a minute for Finn. He's backstage. But Joe, you want me to ask you the question? I can't remember the question specifically, but obviously Neil Warnock has been clipped up on BBC Radio Cornwall by Andy Davis from Twitter.
This isn't the Andy Davis who failed to spot a ball had legitimately overstepped the line at Coventry, no?
No.
No, right.
What do you make of Warnock's comments and I don't know. I'm going.
Yeah, going backstage and you're leaving it in my very trusty hands.
Remember, there's nearly 2,500 people watching. Tell them to go and subscribe on YouTube. Anyway, goodbye.
I will do. And I look forward to the comments that you are going to bring up over the next hour. So before I take on my hosting duties, just want to add some things about the Neil Warnock clip that was sent around pretty much everywhere earlier on today. And those of you who joined us all the way back in December when Stephen Schumacher departed for Staffordshire will remember that I put forward a very passionate case, whilst the romantic in me also took over a little bit and suggested that perhaps with 20 games to go, that Neil Warnock would have been the better choice to come in and steady the ship for the season. I said then that the deal would have been simple. You tell Neil Warnock he's on a 22, 23 game contract, barring cup games, obviously. He would have no say in the recruitment process. He is simply there to keep morale high, which it was at the time, and just carry on with what we were doing. And we were doing some great stuff then. His recent career, whilst he has 8 promotions on his CV, his recent career has been coming in and keeping clubs in this division in these situations. That didn't happen. We went down the Ian Foster route, and, you know, I was all for it. I supported it. I was quite excited by it. And now we're in a position with just a half dozen games to go where we need to fight for our survival. And I'm very much of the look, I'm fully behind the decision that's been taken by the football club to appoint Neil Jusnip and Kevin Nanskeville. I totally understand it. I think it was put very eloquently earlier by Chris Errington and others as to why it's perhaps the continuity of it all is perhaps the best way to go about things. If you take away the romantic side of a promotion winning manager at this football club, they're very few and far between in our history, certainly in recent history, that, you know, coming back to save the day and all of that, and one last dance, Sharon, and all the usual that comes with it. I always felt there were plenty of positives behind bringing Warnock in as a firefighter. I understand the argument that he'd have to get to know the players on a personal level, and there perhaps isn't the time to do that because, as mentioned, with the schedule coming up, there's going to be very little time out on the training pitch. So I understand all of that, but Neil Warnock has seen enough of Plymouth Argo this season to know what we are good at. He mentioned it himself in his interview today. He's been at almost every home game since he left Huddersfield before he took the Aberdeen job. And I just feel like it would have given a huge lift to everybody inside the building. That's what Warnock does. That's how he does it. He doesn't go in and become a tactical genius and rip up the playbook and do whatever he feels is right. He goes in and he puts an arm around everybody in that building and makes them feel good and gives them a lift, and it's all on man management. And right now, the one problem we have with this squad, in my opinion, is they're low on confidence. And you need a motivator in that dressing room. And look, it may well be a case that, and I do firmly believe that once they've made their decision, Andrew Parkinson and Simon Hallett will have definitely sounded out at least Joe Edwards and maybe a few others and asked them what they want in terms of help and support between now and the end of the season. And maybe they did say Jusnip and Nanskeville. Maybe they did feel comfortable in those 4 games before Christmas. But my gut feeling is that whilst I'm going to support them and I have every faith that they'll be able to keep us in the division, Neil Warnock perhaps would have given us an even greater percentage chance of keeping ourselves at bay. But that's it for the minute. That's enough of me. You've heard enough of me over the last hour. John's nodding, a bit rude. But we are... We are here to hear the thoughts of John Allsop's Finn Allen. Finn, good evening. Do you want to just tell us before we begin, what shirt is that?
Yeah, it's actually a thank you for somebody that said to somebody that said they like my pajamas. It's actually a 1994 a Nigeria World Cup shirt with JJ Okocha on the back. It's one of my favorite retro shirts that I own. So, yeah.
Outstanding work, and it's safe to say of all the countries that play in World Cups, Nigeria always excel themselves in their kits. They do a fantastic job with their kits, and of course, the people's king.
What about the Cameroon onesie kit? Who remembers that?
Is that the Roger Miller one?
No, it was later than that. It was like a Cameroon kit that was sewn together at the shirt short join. And I don't think it lasted very long, as I'm not sure it was massively practical. Anyway, it was a good kit.
I think we'll save the kit World Cup for maybe the summer. We'll have a get together and have a kit World Cup. But let's hear from the people's king. We'll go straight to him. We're back at the familiar angle that we all know and love on Argyle Podcast, looking up at royalty. Sam Down, the departure of Ian Foster, your initial reaction.
My initial reaction was relief, because I think it just gives us a lot more of a chance. I will give my views on Dewslip as opposed to potentially Warnock, which I'm sure everyone will have their own view on, but certainly relief that just Ian Foster isn't going to manage another game for us. The man was completely out of his depth. I think that became obvious quite shortly, as much as we all wanted to give him a chance to turn it round. It wasn't going to happen. I'm going to say I told you so on one point, which is from day one. I said, as much as I want to give him a chance, I have the feeling he's been hired not because he's a good manager, but because he is a good person to manage. I don't think I could have probably said it much better, in all honesty, as much as I don't want to big myself up too much. I think he was clearly somebody who was hired to fit a mould to some extent. That's not to say that the club appointed him thinking he was going to be bad. Obviously not, because that doesn't reflect well on Hallett, Parkinson or Dewslip. But did they hire him because I think he was a person who wasn't going to rock the boat, wasn't going to kick up a fuss, was going to work very easily under the director of football and not kick back against him too much? I'd be lying if I said I didn't think that played into it. I was willing to put it aside. I was willing to say, give him the best chance possible. We were all delighted after that start on Swansea away. And I think it's been pretty much all dreadfully downhill since, with the brief aberration of Middlesbrough.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Really, I think it should have happened before the international break. I said that on the Twitter space that was so brilliantly hosted by Stan the other night. I can see he's in the comments. I think it should have happened after the international break, but it's done. So my initial reaction was absolutely relief. I think that nobody can say the fans didn't give the lads every ounce of backing on Monday, because they did. All I heard was support up to about the end of minute 93. I didn't hear anything aimed at Foster. Literally just as that final minute of play kicked in, that's the only time I heard anything about Foster. And then a little bit at full time. Even then, it was actually far less virulent than it was in the Preston game. Look, we are where we are. The sacking's happened. I think we are going to have to, at some point in the summer, the executives within the club and possibly us fans at fan forums are going to have a bit of a post-mortem of what's happened, because it didn't just go wrong. It went so badly wrong. It was frightening, in all honesty. The complete lack of communication with the media, the rumours of complete meltdown within the squad, which, given how many players, partners of players, close friends of players are liking, the Instagram comments, etc., about him leaving. I think that probably says there was some truth in it. The abandonment of the style of football that we grew to know and love. The one thing you could kind of say to him up till about maybe the Ipswich or Sheffield Wednesday game was, hey, at least the points aren't too bad. At least the points per game isn't too bad. But then the draw at Blackburn, then 3 losses in a row, completely screwed that. The points then did start to become bad as well. And I think his total points per game extrapolated over a season would have us above Rotherham and nobody else. So it didn't just go wrong. It went so wrong, it was scary. And I think we have to have a look at that, because when we have a thorough recruitment process of 100 odd people, we really, need to think, how did we hire somebody who was not up to it? And look, I don't bear him any personal animosity whatsoever. I really don't. I felt sorry for him. It's the truth. And when he came over to the press, to the home fans after Preston and got absolutely barracked, I felt sorry for him. I felt sorry for him. He was being interviewed by Chris yesterday. He looked like he was about to break down. And I think he probably was on the verge of it. I felt sorry for him. And I'm glad that he's been put out of his misery. And I hope that he goes and has a very fruitful career doing youth coaching, which I think he is clearly has an aptitude for. I don't think he will ever have a career again managing an EFL club. I really don't, because I think he will be so tainted by this spell that, even if he goes and has a successful spell coaching somewhere, if he applies for a job in League One or League Two in a couple of years' time, I don't think they're going to go for him just because of this spell being such a disaster. So I hope he excels in coaching, where I think he does have an aptitude, but he clearly does not have an aptitude for managing of AFL club. I don't think, certainly not based on that. The decision's been made. Whatever thoughts we have about the decision for Neil Dewsnip, I am probably going to get them out of my system on this pod when Joe asks me about them specifically. But once I've got them out of my system on this pod, I'm then not going to get them out of my system anymore. I'm going to put all my efforts, all my energy into supporting the lads for 6 cup finals. This is what it comes down to.
Into moaning about Neil Dewsnip, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. It comes down to it comes down to 6 cup finals. We've got to get. Look, I think this has certainly given us a much better chance. I'm sure you can all read between the lines of what I'm saying. I think if we'd have hired Neil Warnock, it would have been an even better chance still. But I certainly think this gives us a much better chance. We did see some good football under Neil. Neil Dewsnip, that is. We did see some good football under him in the spell over Christmas. And let's just hope we see some more of it. I'll be there at Rotherham on Friday night. And I'll be there, touch wood, for the remaining 5 games or so. Let's make it absolutely, 6 cup finals. Roar them on with our support, like we did on Monday. And let's just hope they're a bit more receptive. And let's just get this done. It probably only needs 7 points out of the 6 games. 8 an absolute push. That's 2 wins, 2 draws. And I think that would be comfortably enough. Well, relatively comfortably. And maybe even 6 might do it. All depends on other results. But I think we're going to need probably at least 6, at most 8. That's a point a game or just over. We can do this. It's been a mistake. We've rectified it. We've not rectified it quite as quickly as I think we should have. We've not rectified it in the exact way I think we should have. But we've addressed it. Let's go and do these 6 games.
Yeah, John, I'm going to come to you next. Just a quick one before we do. There are now very nearly 2,500 people watching, which is quite mad. Please do continue to get your comments, your questions in. Aaron will get round to showing them on screen. Do like, comment, subscribe, retweet, share, whatever it is we need to do on social media to keep the number rising. John, I want to come to you next. Obviously, we were joined earlier by Chris Errington, who I didn't get to say my thanks when he was on. I think he's done a sterling job in recent weeks, because I don't think it's easy to ask these tough questions to people, who are potentially facing the sack. I certainly wouldn't like somebody sticking a microphone in my face every week if I was in trouble in my job. Ian Foster, the person, though, because in his press conferences, it hasn't been all roses and sunshine and rainbows and things. He's not necessarily adhered himself to the supporters, and there wasn't quite that connection that we've had with certainly not the previous, to a point you could say, 3 managers, because up until the last 6 months, Adams had the fan base in the palm of his hand, didn't he, really? Just how much of a problem did that become for Foster? The constant, if you like, belittling of Argyle in the press. I don't think he was necessarily doing it intentionally. I just think some people aren't necessarily as media trained as we've got to remember. Stephen Schumacher has a degree in it, doesn't he, in sports media or journalism or something. So he was obviously well up to it. And I think Ryan Lowe could talk for, I wouldn't say England, because Scousers think they're their own nation, but he could talk for Liverpool. So perhaps that was a change that we couldn't adjust to. But how much of a problem was that in his departure in the end?
Derek Adams had the fan base in the palm of his hand and then clenched his fist. I think that was the problem. I just wanted to... Yeah, I just wanted to quickly add on the Chris Errington point, because I loved having him on earlier as well. I was listening to it. And actually, I am dabbling in some journalism in my day job. And obviously, the media industry is in a very bad place indeed. And I think that especially, you know, local reporters getting cut left, right and center, you know, including at Title Zone by Reach like Plymouth Live is, you know, local sports reporters getting snapped up by The Athletic or, you know, in the US context, going to do fan blogs or whatever, to have someone kind of from the outside, you know, not on the side of the fans per se, but someone whose job is not to represent the club, not to be official media, sitting there asking those difficult questions. I think that can go under the radar when times are good, when, you know, the official media have kind of nothing they want to de-emphasize or hide. And I think he has been absolutely outstanding throughout this entire period. And yeah, we shouldn't be considering ourselves lucky to have that. It should be a basic thing that every community and every football club has, but we are lucky to have it. And I hope that people appreciate him for that reason. To come on to your question, I sort of see it two ways. I think on the one hand, he, as you indicated, obviously didn't help himself with some of his answers. I think probably the turning point amid, you know, lots of other frustrating things that he said was what he said, I believe, after the West Brom game. You're used to seeing us take the game to much weaker teams. Arguably, might have been true because our home fixtures in the first half of the season did skew quite early, quite easy compared to the second half. And obviously then we were in League One before that. But it's just the sort of thing you can't say, particularly when we've invested so much emotionally and financially and time-wise, obviously, and having a, you know, a sort of gung-ho, don't fear anyone mentality, a mentality that clearly helped us get promoted last season against teams with much bigger budgets. So that was, I think, probably the point of no return. And that was a self-inflicted thing to say for sure. I think, you know, he could come across as kind of abrasive or patronizing at times. Don't think speaking to the media is probably his greatest skill. That being said, I didn't actually hate all of his dealings with the media. And I think early on when things were going well, I felt he actually acquitted himself quite well. I think it would have been
quickly, me and you were very quick to praise him and, you know, really defend his corner in our group chats, weren't we, in the early days. You know, we thought it was a breath of fresh air what we were getting in the media.
Yeah, and I think particularly after being betrayed by Shuey in that way, and I'm not saying Shuey was ever kind of a, you know, as much of a Ryan Lowe when it came to, you know, the fist pumps to the crowd and the kissing the badge and the fucking magnificent, to quote Nathan Jones from the one game he won at Stoke many, many years ago. But that's what I mean. A Nathan Jones or someone could have come in, they could have kissed the badge, they could have, you know, run around the pitch doing fist pumps and, you know, pretending to love the club. Foster never did that. And I, you know, even when times were good. And I think that that actually wasn't a bad thing. Because I think if he'd done that early on and then sort of retreated into a position of, you know, defensiveness amid growing failure, he would have been even more hated. Which I think probably brings me on to sort of the final point here, which is, I think it's all about results. I really, really do. Like, I think he didn't help himself in the press conferences. I think he did say some stupid things. And I think there are certain fans who he alienated to the point of they're probably, you know, I'm not saying it's anyone in this chat who doesn't have a chair who is among these fans, but, you know, alienated certain fans to the point probably of never coming back on side. But the vast majority of punters who pay their money to go to Home Park every week, maybe don't go to away games, maybe don't pay as close attention to the club as we do, I don't think they would have cared a jot how he sounded in press conferences if the results had been good. And if after that Middlesbrough game, we'd continued to win one, lose one, cruised into that kind of mid-table area, season was petering out, had a couple of good performances at home in particular, and he had conducted himself more or less the exact same way in the press conferences, I don't think the vast majority of people would have cared. So I said earlier, it wouldn't have had any effect. Obviously, it would have had an effect on people who pay really close attention to it. And obviously, you know, you do need to build a relationship with the fans for when times are bad so that you can then cash that in. But I don't think he really had enough time to do that, however he conducted himself early on, to be honest. And the thing that really did for him in terms of popularity was the style of football and the results. And as I see it, the bad media performances were really just rubbing salt into the wound and upsetting people who were actually watching them more than it was any kind of significant part of his downfall. It is how I see it.
Yeah. Just a very quick mention. I'm going to come to you next, Finn. But just a quick mention on BBC Radio Devon tomorrow morning on the breakfast show with John Akers. Andrew Parkinson is going to be on BBC Radio Devon tomorrow, and he's going to go through a couple of things. He's going to go through why Ian Foster was the best man for the job, and he's also going to answer the question that quite a lot of people on social media have asked today, is if Neil Warnock's available, why is he not coming in? Andrew Parkinson will answer all of that on Radio Devon on the breakfast show tomorrow. So I'm sure that will be circulated in almost every group chat west of Bovey Tracy tomorrow morning. Finn, we're gonna come on to the whole Neil Jusnip, Kevin Nanskerville appointment in a second. Just your take on Ian Foster, A, his tenure, which obviously is short, but also Ian Foster the man, and just how, you know, just trying to we don't have to necessarily throw a huge amount of sympathy or anything like that, but we do have to remember that, as I said at the start, this is a man who's trying to make his way in club football. It's going to be a tough time for him at the moment, isn't it? Because it's ended so quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like, I as soon as the report from the Telegraph came out last night, I went into the lounge, spoke to my dad, and the first thing I said to him, I'm not happy I'm telling you this news because it's a man losing his job, but is the news, right? And that's how I sincerely feel about it, right? And we're all Argyle fans, and ultimately, no one wants to be in the position that we are now, you know, for Ian Foster, the man, and his family. But most of all, for us as fans, we wanted Ian Foster to succeed because the board thought that this was the long-term plan. So, you know, the fact that we're in this position right now shows that it has gone pretty much as bad as it could have possibly gone. So that is not good for anybody involved. And now we're in not a perilous position, but certainly one of uncertainty. And we've only 6 games to save it. Obviously, it's still in our own hands, and I think that's the most important thing. That's probably why they did it yesterday, because it was the last possible opportunity, probably, that if Foster wasn't sacked before then, that I don't think we would have won at Rotherham had he still been in charge. And then that would have certainly seen us probably in the relegation zone on Saturday. So I believe they've done it at the last possible moment they possibly could, to you know, really to save our season. And I'm not happy about him losing the job, but it needed to happen. He, like, it's like Sam touched on, he was just out of his depth, and you know, there's that you know, unfortunately, you know, a coaching it shows you now. I saw a tweet today, I don't know who from. There's a Joe Edwards at Millwall and Ian Foster. Those are two young coaches who were highly thought of. Their coaching credentials are highly thought of. They came into difficult situations in terms of clubs in the Championship. And it shows you, you know, like you said, Joe, about like Neil Warnock coming in and being a really good man manager above all else. You know, you can be one of the brightest brains in the world in terms of football, but if you don't know how to manage a dressing room, it's all a bit pointless.
Yeah. And I think that's the one thing that we do have to try and grapple with as a fan base at the moment, is there's two sides to this, isn't there? We want the best for our football club, but equally we wanted this to be the right decision, and we have to make the right decision to keep us in the division. So an open forum now, you can all take turns, because I think we, you know, the three of you have differing views on perhaps the strength of the arguments on this. So Ian Foster is out. That period in Argyle's chapter, whilst it was brief, is over. We have 6 games left, and we have Neil Jusnip, director of football, Kevin Nanskerville, first team coach, and Simon Ireland, I guess, also a first team coach. I don't actually know what his official title is, on duty for the rest of the season, obviously with Daryl Flahaven remaining in his goalkeeper role. Open forum, Jusnip and Nanskerville to the end of the season. Thoughts on that, and thoughts on the strategic direction we are heading in over the course of the next few months.
I'll allow Sam to focus on nothing other than supporting the players and looking forward for the next six games here.
I did say after this pod has ended.
yeah, okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Right. Cards on the table. I think it's an error not to go for Neil Warnock when he was very much touting himself to the club. I don't think he could have been any more blatant if he was hovering around outside the gates with a sign saying, pick me, could he really, as to how much he clearly would have had the job. Look, I think maybe there's an aspect of Neil Dewsnip has gone to Simon Hallett and Andrew Parkinson and said, look, fellas, I got you into this mess. Let me get you out of it. Foster was my man. Let me be the one to turn it around and be the hero almost. And if that is the case, I admire his confidence because I think he's certainly not lacking in that. I think maybe this is his redemption arc because I do think that, look, there's a lot of stuff going around about him that I think is probably over the top about how he's a, you know, dictator and all the rest of it. Look, we don't know that. Here's what we do pretty tangibly know. We do pretty tangibly know that he is in charge of recruitment strategy. We do pretty tangibly know that he was at least heavily involved in the Foster hire, even if he wasn't the only one. And we do know that he was pretty heavily involved in the move to 3-4-3, all of which have had negative impacts on our season. That's before we even take into the equation rumours of a fallout with Shuey. Look, was that really what pushed Schumacher out the door? Probably not as much as the massively increased salary, if I'm honest.
So Sam, the two of the three points you just raised there about being involved in the appointment of the new manager, or the old head coach, and the recruitment policy, take out the whole switch to 3-4-3, etc. Isn't that the job remit of a director of football at a football club? To oversee
hang on though, Joe. I'm not saying that he shouldn't be doing those jobs. I'm saying that he's not done those jobs well because he's hired Ian Foster, who was a mistake. And I think the recruitment in January was not what we'd have hoped for. So I'm not saying that he shouldn't be doing those jobs at all. I'm saying he's not done them to a great level. Now, look, is this his chance to turn things around? Maybe. But I'm going back to what Nick said. I think somebody who has, for all the best will in the world, completely taking aside any of the more wild speculation, someone who has had a part to play in getting us here, I'm not sure it's the best person to then get us out of it, in truth. I certainly think he gives them a better chance. I think that the performances from his four games in charge were decent and they merited more than the 3 points they got. I think we got unlucky at Cardiff with a fluke of an own goal. How nine times out of ten that just doesn't get in that situation at all. We absolutely dominated the game and Barley Mumba could have won it at the end. We got a bit unlucky at Southampton with that ludicrous offside call. That would have put us 1-0 up. Look, would we have won the game? I don't know, but I reckon we could have drawn it at least. We got a bit unlucky Watford home. I think we were the better team. The only game where you could say we could got a bit lucky was the very first game, which was Birmingham. And even in that, I think a draw was a fair result in the end. So I want to be a bit positive.
By the way, what a point that was in hindsight. I know we were all very annoyed with it at the time, but Jesus Christ, if we'd lost that game, that would have had...
Pulling that back to 3-3 has sort of saved us a bit from being a bit cut adrift. Yeah. So look, the performances in his four games in charge were good. The results weren't quite there, but I think the performances were, the performances merited more than the results got. So that's the good stuff. I just think that with the mistakes he has made as director of football, not saying he shouldn't do those jobs, but the way in which he's executed those jobs has left me enough to doubt him. And look, whatever you think about whether he should carry on as director of football beyond this season, which is a separate debate, it is an almighty show of trust to give him those six games. And if he then does a great job and if he keeps us up, I think he will absolutely have the thanks of the fan base. Even then, there would still probably be a conversation about whether he's the best director of football going forward. But blimey, it would be a fantastic thing for him to keep us up and have that redemption moment. I just think, even taking aside Dewsnip, when Neil Warnock is there in a relegation fight, he's literally the other side of the river. It just feels a bit mad not to get him in. Look, trying to see the other point of view, he didn't do a great job at Aberdeen. We know that. Clearly not his sort of job at all. He did a very good job at Huddersfield last season. He took over when they were bottom of the league and kept them up. This is what he does. He takes over Championship clubs in a relegation fight. And he is, I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, never once relegated them. He is the ultimate, you know, consummate firefighter. And he's right there and he wants the job. That is such a brave call not to take him. The gentleman who I think Finn was talking about with Joe Edwards and Ian Foster is the fantastic Fox punter on Twitter who I have no affiliation with. I'm not getting any sponsorship money off him, but I love reading his threads. He's a sort of, well, psychological profiler, and he's really interesting in what he writes.
Hey, if I'm not allowed to promote Radio Devon, you're not allowed to promote this.
But, well, it's very relevant to discussion. And I think what he said is about, he said Foster's clearly an intelligent guy and a good coach, but he didn't know the first thing about the Championship. And that focus on and that experience, those sort of things that stay in your subconscious from having done that job and been there and done it 100 times before, do have great value. And experience, in a way, is almost becoming undervalued. Now, look, I'm not completely saying I agree with that, because I think hiring somebody inexperienced, if they had a better skill set, would be okay. But it's hard to argue with what he says, that there are jobs where you can go in without experience, but it's probably, you know, ideally a league below and, you know, preferably not in the middle of a season of a relegation dogfight. And I just think that, you know, even if you say with half a season to go, having a gamble like that was okay, we've sort of gone from somebody who had zero games in management to someone who's had four games in management in Neil Dewsnip. So we've got, yes, you know, he's been in the building as director of football for nearly 5 years now. And he has, you know, whatever you think of this season, he has done a very, very good job as director of football over those 5 years. But it just seems to me to be a bit self-defeating not to go for Neil Warnock. I'm interested to hear what Andrew Parkinson has to say, because no doubt he'll mention it and he'll give his rationale. So I'm going to hold off a little bit. And like I said, now that I've got this off my chest, I will pivot to full support. But I just don't see why, when the man who is most famous for being a motivator, a firefighter, a survivor of relegation battles, is there and wants a job, why you would, A, not go for him at all, and B, why you would give it to someone whose decision-making this season has proved to be questionable. So I hope it pays off. I hope that Neil Dewsnip shuts me up and shuts any others up and does a fantastic job and keeps us up and then move on to next season. And I think he still gives us a better chance, but he doesn't give us as much of a good chance as Ian Foster, as Neil Warnock, that was a slip of the tongue. That gives us a much better chance than Ian Foster, but not as good as one of Neil Warnock. That's my take on the matter. And I will now, I'm sure you'll be all relieved to know, shut up, and I will let John and Finn say their piece.
I'd just like to say a few things, like, on this appointment myself. I want to try and, you know, sort of move away from any of the sort of rumours and kind of take what Neil Dewsnip said on face value, which is in about December, just before Ian Foster was appointed. He was asked, could you see yourself taking this full time? And he said, basically, words to the effect of management or being on the touchline isn't for me. I prefer upstairs. Now, whether there's other reasons for this or he has changed his mind, ever since then, he has been on the touchline with Ian Foster. And a part of a job, I believe, of a director of football is not only to create football strategy, you know, going forward and signings and things like that, but and dictate that and to a certain extent, but also to give the manager some advice. He's been on the touchline, and yes, Ian Foster hasn't had probably the correct support in terms of, you know, assistants coming in late and were they the right assistants and his assistants and whatever. But like in the last like 17 games that Ian Foster's been in charge, Neil Jusnib has been on the touchline, and we haven't seen any change. Ultimately, the head coach is going to have the final say in the game, but we haven't seen any change in Foster's in-game management, any change in...
Just very quickly, just a little facts point. Jusnip was back in the director's box conveniently this weekend. He was in the director's box at Norwich and on yesterday. I keep forgetting. The Easter weekend plays havoc what day it was. But yeah, other than that, though, your point is right that he spent the rest of the games on the touchline.
Yeah, so he spent most of the games on the touchline after having said that he didn't really enjoy that side of the game as much. And we've decided to get him in for the rest of the season. Now, you know, forgetting who's in charge, we are just behind the team and want the team to do as well as possible. And I'm sure the fans can unite on that. And the goal this season has always been staying in the division. So as long as we achieve that, then none of this right now matters. However, Neil Warnock, whether you agreed with it in December, and I said in December, if we couldn't find Foster was a suitable replacement in the end, but if we weren't confident on that, get Neil Warnock into the end of the season. Now, I understand why they went for what they saw as a more long-term appointment. I completely get that. But now that hasn't worked, and he's still there, and he has not chosen Neil Warnock. In my opinion, Hallett, Parkinson, and Jusnip have made a big risk and potentially nailed their own coffin if we go down, because they are all complicit then if we go down. If we stay up, then fantastic, and they can then go away in the summer and go, like, this is what went wrong, and we can, you know, sit down and work out where to go next, fine. But they are taking a huge risk here, and for me personally, you know, opinion now, I think Neil Warnock, nothing's going to guarantee us staying up, far from it, but the guy's record at this level at doing exactly that is pretty much impeccable. So I personally, I'm behind the players, I'm behind Jusnip, and I'm behind Nance Gibbill, but there's an open goal and we haven't took it. Like, we've tried to pass it and gone a bit wide, and, like, you know, for me, that's it, really. Like, for somebody, we put somebody in charge that, whether he meant it or not, said that he didn't want to be a manager, and now he's in charge for the possibly six of our biggest games in recent history.
John?
Yeah, I think I kind of agree and I kind of don't. I think it's a risk for them reputationally, as Finn has identified, purely because of the narrative that Finn is selling, which I think is one that will be very common among our fan base, which is, if we do go down under this management team, the narrative will be Warnock definitely would have kept us up because he's a firefighter, because he's a club legend, because he would have given the place a load of pep and whatever, not the manager pep, the sort of energy pep. And so, you know, they effectively won't be able to turn around and say, well, it wasn't that straightforward, even if that is the truth. And I think it might be the truth, by the way. Like, I'm not going to sit here for one second and say that Neil Warnock definitely would keep us up, because there is no such thing as a sure thing in football. I agree with Sam. It's the appointment I would have made instead of Jusnip, just because I think it maximizes the chance of staying up, given his record and given his kind of power of positive thinking shtick, which seems to be kind of what we desperately need at the moment after what, by all accounts, has been a difficult and kind of divisive period. But it's not a guarantee. And, you know, ultimately, it's probably not going to be a popular thing to say, but it's something Dan Ellard has said all season. Probably we would be overachieving if we came 23rd in this league because of our budget. Now, that's definitely not me saying we should all just go down and thank Christ we were here at all, and down tools and that's it. Of course, I'm not saying that. We've put ourselves in a great position. Punching above our weight is something we've done consistently for years, and huge mistakes have been made that we aren't doing it this season. But I think the fact remains that we are punching above our weight. And I don't think there's any guarantee that Warnock would walk in and be able to kind of turn us completely around within six games. He did an amazing job at Huddersfield. That is a very big reason you know, why I would have appointed him, because I do think that he has recently done it at this level, rather than with, you know, talking about someone like Tony Pulis, who would have been a firefighter 5-6 years ago. But, you know, I do think that at the same time, you know, he did have a lot more time at Huddersfield, right? I believe, I think he came in February kind of time there, maybe March, but certainly not later than that. So, you know, it's a difficult thing. I think the key to this question, and it's kind of a counterfactual we're never going to know the answer to, I guess, is this is what we've been discussing, you know, this difference between Jusnip and Warnock, Jusnip and Foster in terms of style. And I think that the key question is that I don't know the answer to personally is what does that come down to? Because, you know, under Jusnip, we didn't win, sure, but as Sam has alluded to, we had at least three very positive performances. We scored 9 goals in 4 games, which I think, you know, we'd be absolutely some wide. I don't know if I'd bite your hand off for a 3-3 draw at Rotherham, but I certainly would bite your hand off for a 3-3 draw at home to Leicester, or maybe even at home to QPR if we win on Friday. You know, just something that shows that we're going again in front of goal. So, you know, it kind of looks like Jusnip played an even more kind of fundamentalist version of shoey ball on paper, and obviously Foster went completely the other way, and that's ultimately what led to his sacking. So on that basis, you could say, well, Jusnip can revert us to that. But that was the end of the Finn Azaz period at Plymouth Argyle, and I think the moment when Azaz just really hit his stride as being one of the best players at that time in this division, since it's probably kind of regressed at Middlesbrough to not looking quite as good. But I think at that moment, he was as in form as anyone else in the league, you know, created and scored a serious number of goals for us in that kind of December period in particular. So, you know, it's possible that it was that. And if Jusnip had remained in charge on a permanent basis, you know, with what with losing him and then the faulty attacking recruitment that Nick and others have talked about today, you know, maybe that was just a very big factor that was going to be difficult for any manager to circumnavigate. It's also possible that the players are absolutely shattered and have just given everything this season and they're really, really tired, and we have a small and young squad that doesn't quite have it in the legs. And I really hoped that wasn't the case. But like on Monday, I started to see a team that started out really, really well and then, you know, just looked so, so tired by the end. So, you know, it could be, and what I guess we have to hope is that that was all down to Foster, that he lost the dressing room, the players weren't playing for him. Maybe not the down tools in terms of effort, but there was just a huge lack of confidence, and that all we need is a change to go back to something a bit more familiar, a bit more kind of ancien regime, if you will, and the goals will start flowing again. You know, and the Jusnip to Foster kind of handover indicates maybe that that might be the case. But I also, as I've said, I think there are reasons to think that that might not be the case, which probably puts us in a situation where it's really, really difficult for anyone to keep us up if the more kind of pessimistic things I've just said are true, and that would include Neil Warnock. But yeah, to come back to my first point, I ultimately agree with Finn that the narrative is already crystallizing among the fan base that Warnock will keep us up. He's already said he wants to. He's the kind of prince across the water, get him back. And you know, them not doing it is a huge, huge risk, because they are not going to get to turn around in the summer and make the points that I've just made and get a fair hearing for them, I don't think. And I'm not particularly sure that they would even deserve to, given how many things appear to have been mishandled in recent weeks. So, yeah, I think it's a really big risk. And I think, yeah, the only way to answer the question, can Warnock keep us up, is to get him in. And for me, he looks like by far the best option. Again, not a guarantee, but the best option.
Yeah, and, you know, Aaron's not going to like me, but we'll find out from Andrew Parkinson tomorrow what those reasons are.
Here's a question, just quickly, which I'd be interested to hear the group from. Do we think we're definitely not getting Warnock?
I can't see them changing.
Imagine a scenario in which we lose the next two to Rotherham and QPR. I was not convinced that Hallett was going to sack Ian Foster, and it could be interpreted as an act of desperation, even though it came after all the other fans would have done it. But I think for Hallett, that was quite a big thing to do, given how, you know, he's all about stability and giving his man a chance and all the rest of it. And, you know, who's to say if we're 1 point inside the relegation zone with 4 games left and we just have to win them, that they don't pick up the phone if things continue to be awful for the next two? I'm not saying it's possible. I'm not saying it's probable. I'm just saying it could happen.
It wouldn't shock me, John. Nothing would really shock me the way this season's gone. I think it's been an absolutely bonkers season. I don't think we've had one quite like it in terms of all the twists and turns. Look, let's just hope it has a happy ending. It wouldn't shock me. I must admit, I wasn't going to mention it on my grounds of staying positive, but since you literally asked me that direct question, I absolutely did think if we lose on Friday at Rotherham, Saturday is going to be all over. Get Warnock in for the QPR game. It will be. Obviously, I please God hope we don't lose at Rotherham. That would be very embarrassing, certainly not least on Sky TV. But it wouldn't stun me. Let's just hope we get at least 4 points out of these next two so that it's not going to be needed. And then if we get the 4 points, we're more than halfway there to survival, most likely. But would it shock me if we did still see him in that dugout for the final five games or four games or even final three games? No, it wouldn't.
I would like to say, like, I think I would like to hope that they genuinely think, for whatever reason, whether they even think that Neil Warnock is not the guy anymore and they don't want to appoint him. I would genuinely like to hope that they think that Neil Dewsnip and Kevin Nanskerville are the best chance of us staying in this division. Like, I genuinely hope that that's the reason they've picked him, rather than it being, okay, we just need a little bit of continuity, so we're not even going to bother. You know, I genuinely hope that they, because obviously they see them more on a day-to-day basis than we do. And you can believe the rumours about Dewsnip as much as you want or not, but ultimately, you know, we're not in the dressing room, so we don't know. So I genuinely hope that they believe, whether they're right or not, we'll see. But the reason that they've appointed them is because they think that those two are the people to keep us up.
I'm just going to give one last bit of free advertising. Don't worry, Aaron, it's not for a... excuse me, maybe it's for a Rennies or a Strepsils or something. It's not for another radio show or something. It's actually for Sam Barker on Twitter. Because there's been a lot of vitriol going around on social media over the last 24 hours since the statement was put out. And it was, my voice is going, Aaron, you might be needed here. Since it was put out that Neil Dewsnip and Kevin Nanskerville were going to take charge at the end of the season. And there's been a lot said about Neil Dewsnip on various social medias and forums and things. And we've had our disagreements today in our group chats about it. And that's fine. Football's based on opinions. But I just want to read Sam Barker's tweet out. I was as anti-Foster as they come, and I can't quite wrap my head around, sorry, not getting Warnock in. But he then goes on to say, and I think this is a really important point, but there is a time and a place for questioning Dewsnip. This ain't it. Park it for 5 weeks. And I think that's the big point here. We can all have our opinion. I just want to sort of move it away now from the Dewsnip, Nanskerville, Warnock debate, because we got a load of questions in the comments that I still want to rattle through. But I think that's a really important point that, you know, whilst I said my bit on Warnock, you guys have said your bit, all the other panellists tonight have said very eloquent arguments and sales for and against who should be in charge, who shouldn't. We need to park everything now for 5 weeks and just get on with getting behind Dewsnip, Nanskerville, Edwards and the team. Because if we create an atmosphere like we had yesterday for the next three home games, Home Park isn't going to be an easy place to come, even if you're Leicester City, because Home Park really did, although I agree with Chris that it was a weird feeling around Home Park yesterday, in the stands it was very positive right up until that last minute. They were trying everything to get behind the group, and I think that's what we need to focus on. But we have neglected the comments in the questions far too much now. I'm going to blame Aaron for that, because he's been hosting longer than I have tonight. So let's quickly rattle through the ones that haven't been asked yet. Let's have a look. Do a couple of there were for Chris Errington. We can't do them now. What have we got? Argyle Till I Die sent a question in saying, why was he not sacked after that shambolic Sheffield Wednesday Blackburn week? Absolutely no way was 1 point acceptable. We'll try and keep these answers brief if we can, lads, because we have been on for nearly 3 hours now already, and we probably do need to let people get some sleep, and I've got an 11-hour shift tomorrow, so I'd like to get some sleep. So we'll quickly rattle through as many as we can. Sam, you can take this one. Why was he not sacked after Wednesday Blackburn? That's a question they have to answer, isn't it?
Well, it is. I must admit, I actually wouldn't have sacked him in that week. My tipping point was the Preston game. Look, I think Wednesday to Blackburn was a very short turnaround, and I think they were possibly staying up north or meant to be staying up north. So I get not doing it after Wednesday. And obviously Simon Hallett did say in his statement, we have to do everything to make it work. So I get that. Look, after Blackburn, that's a more suitable time to do it, if a whole week before the game. But it was a much improved performance at Blackburn. probably the second best performance of the Foster era after Middlesbrough, maybe Cardiff home, but it was a much improved performance. And I get why they would have thought given one more game. So I get not doing it after that week. The time that it absolutely should have been done was after Preston, going into the international break. That for me is when it's baffling they didn't do it. After the Wednesday Blackburn week, I kind of get why they didn't.
John, this one for you from Marcus Ham on X, Twitter, whatever Elon wants us to call it nowadays. Have Argyle lost its appeal to whomever the next manager could be, even if we do stay up?
No, because there's only 92 jobs in the Football League, 24 jobs in the Championship. You know, it's a bit like seats in F1, right? Like, there are still loads and loads and loads of good drivers who are going to want to drive for Kick Sauber or whatever that team's called now, even if they're an absolute joke, you know, because there's a scarcity of positions and loads of people want to be a manager in the not only in the Football League in this country, in the Championship, which I think is absolutely one of the most exciting leagues in the world. You know, are we going to be able to get in a really big name manager who could be managing at the top end of this division? No, but then that was also the case when we hired Foster. I don't think we were going to be competitive for luring, you know, Daniel Farker or Russell Martin or whoever away from their jobs with top teams at this level, because that's not how it works. So, you know, I still think it's going to be a really, really attractive proposition for, you know, whoever might get the opportunities come in the summer. And I think it arguably, you know, doesn't really matter if we stay up or go down from that individual point of view, because I think it will be an attractive job in League One. Arguably, maybe more so than in the Championship for a certain type of manager. There might be a certain type of manager who looks at us in the Championship and thinks, low budget, struggled towards the end of last season, probably going to be a rebuild job, losing Whittaker, maybe some other big players. You know, that's going to be really tough. You know, a certain type of manager might look at us going down to League One and think, well, this team pissed this division 2 seasons ago. You know, we've got loads more money coming in now from those sales. It's going to be a reset. I really back myself to take them up. So, you know, the sort of tier of manager who I think we were likely to be attractive to in January is probably going to be about the same as the tier we're attractive to now. And obviously the problem was in January, we appointed the wrong person. But, you know, the likes of Michael Duff, for example, I could absolutely still see wanting to take this job in the summer. Obviously, we're going to have a debate nearer the time as to whether that's an appropriate name or not. I know Joe is very enthusiastic about him. I am fairly enthusiastic about him as a potential option. But, you know, it's no guarantee that any one individual wants to take the job, because there are obviously personal circumstances, you know, to do with moving and you know, all the rest of it that just comes with taking any job. But like, in terms of the football side of it, I still think we're a generally upwardly mobile club. Still think we have a reputation for being well run. We're not in dire financial straits, you know, we're not failing to pay the players, that kind of thing. And yeah, once again, there's a scarcity of positions in professional football. So, you know, I'm worried about the appointment in the summer from a point of view of us getting it wrong again potentially. Like we did in January. I'm not worried about the caliber of applicant that we might be able to attract personally.
And one for you, FPL is life. As this has become so obvious that we've stopped saying it, but why were the board hiring a defensive specialist coach when they explicitly wanted an attacking intent?
Yeah, I think that's the question they got an answer, because that was one that I think that's the thing that stuck out for me. It's like, if we didn't have that statement from Simon Hallett saying, well, we want to play vertical football, we want to be an attack-minded side, I think the change in approach wouldn't have been so apparent, because that was certainly implanted in my mind that was what we were trying to do. So this is what I said a couple of weeks ago before you were sacked. Either they've been played, we've been lied to, or by Ian Foster, and they've been lied to in the Brickswell in his interview, sorry, or it's just been a miscommunication of some sort, and that's the third thing is probably likely, but I think I don't really know, and to call him a defensive specialist coach, I don't know you could even say that, because we had two clean sheets in his entire tenure. So whilst he did make some defensive improvements in our team, I think you could tangibly see that. I don't think our defense is good enough anyway at this level generally. So I think, I don't really know the answer to that question. And I think that's probably going to be whether it comes to Andrew Parkinson in that way tomorrow, I think that's one that they're going to have to answer. Like, how did you get this so wrong? And they're probably still working that out themselves, to be honest with you. So
my own gut feeling is the next fans forum, regardless of whatever happens over the course of the next six games, the next fans forum could be quite an interesting watch. And I'd highly recommend that people get down to it or watch it online. Just in case you're wondering why your question hasn't been read out, we've had a lot tonight, all on the same sort of theme. And I'm sort of a little bit, there's the obvious question that, and we've got quite a few of them in the comments here about, who do we want as the next manager? What sort of type of manager do we want? And I sort of feel like at the moment, that's probably the least pressing question at the moment. We will address that in a live stream later on. Once we know what division we're in, we'll come back on and we'll have a big chat about that. But that's probably why I've not read it out. There's another question there from Marcus saying, why isn't Juzenip taking any responsibility? It wasn't just down to Foster. I would guess there's going to be a pre-match press conference tomorrow before Rotherham. And I trust that Chris Errington, Ross Reed, Alan Richardson, James Vickery, whoever it is that's going to go along from the media, might ask that themselves. So we'll have to keep an eye out for that. But of course, we do have the small matter of just six games coming up. And the very next one is Rotherham, an open forum, lads. I know the title is Ian Foster sacked, but we do sort of have to do the day job a little bit with this. Lewin Reed asked the question much, much earlier in the evening. We'll obviously get all three of your thoughts. What's the realistic starting 11s here? What do we expect, or do we expect any wholesale changes? You know, we'll be suddenly expecting everything to be ripped up and go back to a certain style, or, you know, has somebody had a brainwave over the last 48 hours? What are we thinking team-wise ahead of our date with national pay-per-view television?
I think that 4-3-3 is certainly in play. For all the fact that Monday was the final nail in the coffin, the first half hour we did play okay. And I think having 4-3-3 allowed us to dominate possession more than we otherwise might have done. Obviously, I've not really given my thoughts on Monday as a game. I know it's kind of yesterday's news now with all the other stuff, but I do think there were some positives to take from the shape, if not the execution on Monday. So I think I probably would stick with 4-3-3. The only point against 4-3-3 is that with JB injured, Divine suspended for being an idiot, we are probably running out of midfielders to play 4-3-3, unless you go for Forshaw, Houghton and Randall as a trio. But that's maybe a bit too defensive, unless you want to be very brave and put Callum Wright back in. In the spirit of reconciliation and togetherness, maybe put Callum Wright back in. No one else can even play unless you're going to put young Caleb Roberts in. And I think that would be far too much of a baptism of fire. It could be 4-3-3. It could be, I think my gut says it will be 3-4-3 because that was always Juicep's thing to start with. So my gut probably says to me, Pleggy, Gibson, Galloway. I think Ashley Phillips will be rested for a few games. I think he's had a poor run of form, truth be told. So I think it will be Pleggy, Gibson, Galloway. I think we'll see Sorinola. I think we'll see which of the three will miss out. I think Forshaw's not been great lately. I think we'll see Houghton and Randall. Could be wrong. I think we'll see Houghton and Randall with Forshaw on the bench. I think we'll see Mumba left wing back finally in his best position, which we've not really seen all season. And I think we'll see Whittaker, Hardy, and, well, with Divine suspended, I guess that leaves Bundu, doesn't it? So I think we'll see Whittaker, Hardy, Bundu, and I think it'll be 3-4-3 in that shape. Oh, and Cooper in goal, obviously.
I would just make one change to that in terms of what I expect to happen. I think Mumba will be in place of where you had Bundu and Mikel Miller at left wing back against his former and also namesake club.
I kind of forgot about that him actually. I think you could be right, and then it will be because Mumba in the front three of a 3-4-3, that's something that we've seen Mumba in the front three of a 4-3-3, but we've not seen them in the front three of a 3-4-3. That's a lot of talking there. Put my teeth into that. Could be. But I don't know. I think if you're playing 3-4-3, you've got to, as much as Miller has had some good games this season, I think he was good at Norwich on Friday. I do not think he was good off the bench against Bristol City. I think you've got to finally just give Mumba a go in his best position. You could well be right in what I would expect to happen, but I would prefer Mumba.
Finn, any advance on what the two lads have said team-wise for Friday?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of what I actually expect to happen, I'm pretty much going to go with what the other two guys have said, but I'd like to see the way I'm viewing Friday is it's as close, I know it's get points in the Championship, but it's as close to the League One match as we're going to get. Like, Rotherham are not good. Like, I think put Dan Scar in for this game, put Callum Wright in for this game with a point to prove against a weaker opposition, where I think Rotherham's only threat to us is, have they still got Tom Eves? And does he play?
Yeah.
But like Tom Eves, like in the air, is a threat. We know that Dan Scar is very good in the air. I don't believe that the rest of like Rotherham's team is very good. So I believe that Dan Scar's weaknesses in that game won't be showing up as much as it might be in others. And they've got massive points to prove. The manager that they supposedly have fallen out with, if you believe rumours, is gone. And I think I'd put those two in and see what they can do, especially given that, like, you know, we've all been calling for Bundu and stuff, but Foster didn't particularly take to him, and he, to be honest, the limited time that he has on the pitch, he hasn't done loads. So I think I would go for those two. Whether I expect to see them is another thing, but that's the only thing I'd say on that.
I think producer Aaron's gone to sleep. I think it's past his bedtime, so I'll do the comments for him. There's quite a few coming through now. There he goes. He's awake, look. You just have to give him a little jab every now and again just to wake him up. So rounding off then, he's obviously going to bring through the viewers' ideas for team and formations and shapes. One of Ian Foster's non-negotiables in the press conferences, lads, was the next game is always the biggest game of the season. This one certainly is. How do we see it going?
We're on, to use another Ian Foster, and we're on match day -3 at the moment going into this game. And we are all going to have to suffer.
Listen, we're excited,
Sam,
about
some of us have been on since 7:30. Some of us are already suffering.
I think we'll win. Don't ask me if we'll stay up. I'm not so certain on that, but I do think we'll get a win on Friday. And if we do, John, we're maybe nearly halfway there. I think we'll win 2-1. Goals from Mumba.
You're going to give us the minute as well.
Goals from Mumba and Hardy. Hardy's going to break his duck and get back to scoring form. Mumba and Hardy.
John?
If we win, we're halfway there. Whoa, Sam, down, get a chair.
Marker to be clipped, added.
I, just to be contrarian, and also because I kind of partially believe it, I think we'll draw on Friday. It'll be really frustrating. Just the sort of game where we're not really kind of... Yeah, well, I think we'll be very up for it. I don't think that's necessarily been the issue going into games, but just one where things maybe don't go our way. A couple of reasons I think that. Number one is that, Dewsnip's first game in charge after Shuey went, when there was a lot of destabilisation around that, was that draw against Birmingham, who also, you know, are kind of down there. And we weren't really great, but then we did pick up in the other games under him. But that first one was a bit of a learning curve, and yeah, I could see similar here. Also, lest we forget,
We were very lucky to get three. Well, I say lucky, it was quality, but you know, a bit lucky to get 3 points in the home game against Rotherham under Schumacher, which was his final game in charge, even though at the time they were arguably even more abject than they are now. Because I think they're the sort of side that maybe are. Preferred style doesn't really work so well against.
Tried to kill half our team as well that day, didn't they?
Yeah, well, exactly. And that, so I could see us drawing on Friday, a lot of doom and gloom around it, but then we stay up. I think we have a lot more winnable games than some people in the comments and on here seem to think. I think Rotherham, QPR, Stoke and Millwall are all super winnable games, and the two home games against Leicester and Hull are obviously a very much kind of depends which version of those two sides show up. Obviously, if their quality all come out to play on those particular days, we will lose those games because they have unbelievably good players, both of those sides. But I think those other four games out of six are absolutely winnable. So I don't think it's the end of the world if we don't win on Friday, but obviously it would be bloody nice.
Ben, quickly.
Yeah, I'm going to go more with Sam. I don't think it's going to be a particularly vintage performance, and we might come away thinking, oh, how are we going to do, you know, for the rest of these games? But I think the 3 points is the most important thing. Like, we must get 3 points on Friday, I believe. So I'm going to go scrappy 2-1, maybe a bit more nervy than we'd like. And yes, we'll get those 3 points and then... I think we can get 4 points, not easily, but I think we can get 4 points pretty capably over the next two games. 6 out of 6 is a bit more of an ask, but we can definitely do that as well. So,
John, just to pick up on your point that you made about you made it earlier about Birmingham and how that game went and what you said about this game. My gut feeling about that Birmingham performance was there was such a buzz leading into it that the players were almost too fired up and ready for it, and perhaps too much wanted to prove a point. And maybe that did lead to the 3-1 scoreline at one point that day. And I hope that's not the case in this game. I hope that we're a little bit more level-headed going into Friday and we just approach it as the next game. Sam, you asked me not to. So are we going to stay up? And yes, I do want an answer because we've got an answer off everybody else on the podcast tonight. So I want an answer.
No, 1 point, clipped. Final day.
Clipped. That's on TikTok tomorrow.
But everyone, I said we wouldn't go up last season. I said we wouldn't go up last season. So I'm hopefully going to have the same outcome. Look, I think it'll be close.
Sam didn't say we were going up last season until Callum Wright put the goal in against Shrewsbury.
Yeah. Look, I think it'll be very tight. I think we absolutely can do it. I think it will be on the knife edge. I absolutely think it will go to the final day. Please don't interpret this as me saying we're doomed. We may as well give up. But if you're asking me for my guttest of gut feelings, do we do it right now? I am just inclining against. And I hope I'm really, really hope I'm wrong.
Just before I go on to the closer, just to check with you two, you both said we're fine, didn't you?
No,
I can't remember. Can't remember what I said, to be honest.
I don't think we're fine. I think on balance, I was sort of saying I think we'll draw at Rotherham and stay up to counter Sam's we'll win at Rotherham and go down opinion. I think I do on balance think that. Honestly, like any outcome from we get 0 points between now and the end of the season and just go down without a fight, or we win 4 out of 6. It turns out Foster was the problem and, you know, pretty much the entire problem. And we just go back to our free scoring ways against a selection of quite rubbish teams, frankly, is possible. I don't think it has to go down to the final day at all. We've got, you know, 6 games is quite a lot of games and quite a lot of them are winnable. So I think we could very easily find ourselves 4 or 5 points clear of it within 3 or 4 games. I really, really do. But yeah, obviously it could go to the final day. I don't know if I would have agreed with Chris Errington's take that we'll all take it to go down to the final day, which he said earlier. I think I'd much rather it was done before having to face a whole side with unbelievable Premier League quality in their team at a nervy home park. So hopefully Aaron, Joe, let's get it done at Stoke. How about that? Let's aim for that. Exactly. That'd be nice.
Yeah, the Neil Jusnip versus Stephen Schumacher dust up at the Britannia Bet365, whatever it's bloody called nowadays, the Oatcake Arena. Let's be fair, that's, you know, Chris is talking probably with his journalism hat on a little bit, and he will I'm sure he'll do a very good job of, as he does every week, on covering Argyle. And it would be a great thing, you know, from a journalist's point of view. A last day decider is always a good thing. I'm conscious that we've been on now for 3 hours, 10 minutes and 42 seconds. We've had some great guests on with us this evening. Massive thanks to, I'm going to get this wrong now, but massive thanks to Adam, to Ben, to Graham, to Nick, to James from One Team in Devon, to Chris Errington, who was great. And we hope to have Chris on again in the future. More on that in the future. To Finn, to John, to Sam, to Aaron, who's now backstage producing. From myself, just a quick word before and we go any further.
Joe as well.
Yeah, thanks to you, Joe, as well. Sterling effort.
As you can see on the right-hand side of your screen, coming soon, sign up, 10% off, sign up to the mailing list. The details are on the screen right now. We do have some Argyle Life merchandise coming out before. If you haven't already, what have you been doing for the last 3 hours and 11 minutes? Why have you not subscribed to Argyle Life on YouTube, followed us on Facebook, followed us on Twitter, whatever it is you need to do? And share the word. And I speak on behalf of everyone to do with the Green and White podcast. 2,990 of you was the peak this evening. We are incredibly grateful to all the support, all the comments, all the views, all the shares, all the likes, all the retweets, whatever it is. We are incredibly grateful. Of course, when things don't go our way as podcast, when things don't go the way of the club, in a positive manner as podcasters, it always makes it a little bit easier for us to talk. Although we did enjoy talking about our unbelievable season last year. But that is all. We've kept you for long enough. We've all got work. Thank you for all the comments. Thank you for the support. Keep the faith, as Guy says. We've got 6 massive games to go. We have to get behind Neil Jusnip, Kevin Nansgrill, Joe Edwards, the whole team, the whole club. We have 6 enormous games to go. We won't be back this week before Rotherham. We've done our Rotherham preview here tonight. We will be back on Saturday night. Hopefully my voice will have recovered by then, or I'll just get a couple of pints of water next to me and I'll be able to get through it. I believe the people's champion, Sam, is joining us with a couple others as well. And then we'll be back. There is potentially a plan for another space post-game as well. More on that on the day on Saturday, but Friday night, even late Friday night. There you go. Aaron's hot on it. But thank you all for the support. Thank you for watching. This has been the Green and White podcast, brought to you by Argyle Life. Get behind the boys. One last push, one last dance, you could almost say. Maybe not for Warnock, but certainly for Jusnip. Night all.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.